Good morning. Welcome to Ask the Chief. I'm Richard Day, along with WTOP's Mark Seagraves, and our guest in the studio for the full hour is D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier. We are taking your calls at 877-336-1035. You can also email questions as well. Go to WTOP.com. There's our host now, Mark Seagraves.
Thanks, Richard. And Facebook and Twitter, we'll take your questions any way you can get them to us. Chief, thanks for coming in. Let's start off with the news that happened over the weekend, and that was a fight at a DuPont Circle restaurant. Spilled out onto Connecticut Avenue in the wee hours of Sunday morning. Two people were shot, three were stabbed, one man died. You closed the club. Update us on the investigation and the status of the club.
Still a lot of investigative work going on, as you would imagine, when an incident occurs in a club where there's a lot of people to be interviewed. So that's still ongoing. Making a lot of progress, working with the people that were in the club, talking to the detectives. We don't have an arrest as yet, but there has been some progress made. It's just, this is going to take some time. There's a lot of people that have to be interviewed.
Have you determined yet what even started the fight, if the people knew each other or?
Well, it appears there were multiple fights through the course of the evening leading up to the fight that happened at the end of the evening. So a variety of different reasons for the fights. But you know, once that last conflict began and it started to spill out on the streets, when it really rose to a much more deadly level.
Has the restaurant reopened? You closed it, which is in your capacity, you can close a club after a violent incident. Have they reopened?
They have not, that I'm aware of. And we do it in a 96-hour closure, and then it goes to the ABC board for them to handle from there. But I don't think they're reopened yet.
And Jack Evans, the council member for that ward, has now said that he's going to propose legislation that would mandate. What this was this is a restaurant, and there's a lot of restaurants that do this, that after they're done serving dinner, they convert to an after-hours bar, and in some cases lease out their property to a promoter who brings mm-hmm. people in for kind of a nightclub scenario. He wants restaurants and clubs like that now to mandate them to hire off-duty police officers to work as security. How would that work?
Well, it's not very different than what we do already in Adams Morgan and some of the other areas, U Street. I mean, I think nationwide, if you have areas where there's ABC establishments, especially where they're clustered, and particularly ABC establishments that have live entertainment or dancing, DJs, things like that, that's the areas where there's the highest probability for some sort of fights or violence. Our officers that work in the other club areas, they work outside. We don't work inside the club. But the clubs also have options of hiring security guards that can work inside. We have to stay outside. Security folks can work inside. So there's a lot of options.
And the idea of mandating that, is that something you're comfortable with? Are there enough officers to facilitate that?
Well, what that program does is it uses off-duty officers. So it doesn't impact services other places in the community. That's the important part of it. So I think it's not a matter of resources. It's a matter of coordinating with the clubs and then their resources for hiring the off-duty officers.
And then, as you said earlier, that you closed this club for 96 hours. How do you have stats on how many clubs you've closed in the past few years and how often you've used that power?
Yeah, since 2007, it's about 6 or 7 times a year that we've had to use it. And I think each year there's been some repeat clubs. There's been some clubs that we have had to close more than once. So about 6 or 7 times a year. I mean, there's been pretty conservative use of it. But anytime there's a serious injury, and particularly if there's a weapon involved inside of a club, I'm going to close it.
Inside or outside? I mean, because this incident happened, it's pretty clear that at least the shootings and the stabbings happened outside of this club.
Well, I don't think it's clear that there was not, at least after the initial large fight inside, it's not clear that at least one of the stabbing victims wasn't stabbed inside.
And that's yet to be, but so that's what your investigation
is. We're still trying to determine, but all evidence at the time pointed to that at least one person was stabbed inside the club. But that would not make any difference at this point. We had a very violent incident that started in the club that spilled out onto the sidewalk, and somebody lost their life. That's a pretty serious issue for us.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier taking your calls and emails on Ask the Chief. More of this after traffic and weather on the 8s.
Good morning. We continue with Ask the Chief. Our guest, D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier. We're taking your questions at 877-336-1035, and you can also email us at WTOP.com. Now here's Mark Seagraves.
And let's get right to the phones. We have Solomon is calling for the district. Solomon, you're on with D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier.
Yeah, Kathleen there. How you doing today?
Hi, Solomon.
Good. I was wondering, are you all going to try to go back and erase the records of those motorists that was arrested with, you know, expired registration? You know, they was arrested for having expired registration on their car and they was arrested. Were you going to erase any records of that for them?
No, all of the arrests that were made under a valid D.C. law will remain. Once the law changed and the arrest process ceased, that's the process going forward. But those that occurred under a valid D.C. law will not be erased.
So just to bring everybody up to date, the law was that you could arrest people if it was expired more than 30 days. And you, as it turns out, the department did exercise that and made numerous arrests over the past few years for that. The council changed that. There was a lot of brouhaha. A senator from Virginia weighed in. And the council changed the law. And now you're no longer arresting. You'll tow. Right. You can't impound. But there's no going back in time, putting the toothpaste back in the tube for
That's
these people.
A very good analogy, these the people toothpaste who, back in the tube.
Chief, let me ask you about the Occupy DC movement. Mayor Gray was on this program a few weeks ago, and he said that this has cost DC taxpayers at that point more than $1 million. The vast majority of that cost for DC police officers who are covering both their marches and their encampments. What can you tell us about how things are going, how that is impacting your budget, and more importantly, how it's impacting your ability to patrol the rest of the city?
Well, the most of the overtime that was used by MPD was for a couple of specific incidents. So on a daily basis, we're not using overtime. We're using the officers that are assigned to handle special operations and normal daily protest activities. So it's a very small number of officers on a daily basis now. Just a couple that, you know, just have to, and the only reason they have to monitor consistently is if the group steps off and marches. Obviously, we got to make sure that the traffic safety, one, we keep traffic flowing, and two, we don't have pedestrians struck that are involved in the marches. So it doesn't pull officers from the neighborhood. In the two or three times we've had pretty large events with the Occupy movement, we did use overtime because we didn't want to pull officers from the neighborhood. So, but, you know, over time, it does start to become a strain. Now, I didn't budget for this, although our overtime usage is down significantly because of reforms that we've made. I have a little bit of wiggle room. I just don't have a lot.
Well, the police union, who you're well familiar with these guys, they tell a different story. They're saying that you are pulling officers from the neighborhood patrols, and the ripple effect of that is that crime, and particularly violent crime in the neighborhoods, in the 2 months that Occupy DC has been in the city, is actually up. They say it's up by 11% over this time.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the sky's kind of always falling there. I don't know. You know, the overall, our crime is, especially the important crimes, homicide, ADWs, shootings, armed robberies with guns, those are all down. In fact, we've got double-digit reductions in robberies with guns and ADWs, shootings. Everything is down. Shootings down 20%. But, you know, what we have seen an increase in, we see an increase in this time of year, every year, and that is, especially now with the release of some of the new electronics and the smartphones, is a lot of snatch robberies going on. So that is a norm. This is a normal time of year for that type of activity to go up. I don't think it has anything to do with the Occupy movement. And then, and as I said before, you know, on a daily basis, the Special Operations Division, who does not normally do routine patrol in the neighborhoods, is handling the Occupy movement. When we have to pull officers for larger events, like the event down at DAR last week, we use overtime. So yeah, they're neighborhood officers, but they're overtime, so they're not pulled from their normal assignment.
But you saw the numbers that the union released last week, and they paint a different picture. I mean, are his statistics just fabricated or wrong? I mean, he seems to be pulling them from your crime data.
He's pulling them from the Crime Apps DC, which usually runs, the data runs a little bit behind. I think it's 2 or 3 days to catch up. But I don't see a consistency with the crime data that we publish. And we have had, in the last 30 days, I think about an 8% increase in crime, according to our, you know, internal data. I think maybe it's just a matter of when he pulled that stat and whether the Crime Maps DC thing has been updated. Like I say, that system usually runs 2 to 3 days behind.
But you're saying in the last 30 days, crime is up 8%?
It's about 8%.
Now, is that all crime?
Compared
violent?
To the previous 30 days. But this is something that happens typically this time of year. You know, this is the shopping time of year. This is when, you know, you have the people who leave packages in their cars and the cars get broken into. This is the release of the iPhone 4 nationwide. We saw an uptick in those snatch-type robberies. So this is not something that's unpredictable and inconsistent with years past.
And so there's no correlation with the Occupy DC movement, redeployment of officers?
No.
And an uptick in crime?
It has absolutely nothing to do with that. Like I said, the only time we've used significant numbers of officers to deal with the Occupy movement, we've used overtime, which is why our costs went up.
And back to the Occupy movement, how long will you be able to sustain? I mean, this is obviously putting a strain on your budget. I think the mayor's figures were nearly $1 million just for police mm-hmm. alone. How long can you afford to do that? I mean, just for the mayor even said, you know, at some point budget becomes a part of the equation here.
Well, the figure that we use for the close to $1 million is, you know, I calculate based on how many officers were assigned each day. In the initial, we didn't use any overtime for this until the incident happened at the convention center. I think it was November 4th. So the initial almost $1 million calculation is on-duty officers and what their salary is based on how many officers we had to assign to the movement. We have since used overtime for two or three big events like the March to the Bridge and DAR. But it's, over time, it's going to be tough to sustain.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier is here for the hour, taking your calls and emails. More with the chief after traffic and weather on the 8th.
We continue with Ask the Chief, our guest this hour, D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier. We're taking your questions at 877-336-1035, and you can email questions at WTOP.com. Here's Mark Seagraves.
Chief, let's close the loop on a couple things that we were talking. One, you were saying that there is one category of robberies right now that is up dramatically. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Robberies for this last 30-day or 60-day time period compared to the same time period last year is the same. It's stagnant. But robbery snatches, that is the ones we were talking about specifically, snatching those iPhones and snatching those small electronics, that type of robbery is up. So even though the total number of robberies is the same, what we're seeing is an increase in those snatching those iPhones. That's why it's so important to remember when you're walking down the street with your iPhone or you're sitting in a sidewalk cafe and you've got your iPhone on the table. That's what the predators are taking advantage of.
And what's the percentage of the increase there?
For the snatch-type robberies is 32% above what it was the same time period last year. So that's almost...
And you were saying that you were predicting this because...
We knew it. We knew it when the iPhone 4 came out. Because it happens every time there's some new electronic device that's very popular. In fact, we did a lot of pre-release stuff on our listservs reminding people that, you know, this is going to be a very popular item to, you know, be aware of their surroundings and not walk down the street with it.
And
but it's hard to tell people not to walk down the street with their iPhone. I'm guilty myself.
We're a culture, yes, it is in our culture now. Let me also close the loop on the Occupy DC. You mentioned that one of the things you want to prevent are protesters being hit by cars. And this obviously is because this did happen at the convention center a few weeks ago. Tell us about that investigation. What's the latest on the investigation into what happened there with several protesters being hit by apparently the same driver?
Yeah, I don't think that we've determined that the same driver was involved in all of those. I mean, we've gotten some video, and I haven't gotten an update on it in the past week or so, but we've gotten some videos from a variety of different places. It does not appear it's the same car involved. And, you know, some of the video shows the one driver that was stopped.
He waited
on the scene. So I know that's still ongoing. The investigation is not complete, but I don't know exactly what the status is right now.
So you've determined now that there are two cars involved.
All I know is that it did not appear to be the same car involved in all of the incidents. And what I can tell you that I've seen personally from the videos is that it was a variety of different types of issues. You know, there's one issue where protesters have a small gap and car tries to get through the gap and protesters run to try and block the gap so the car can't get through. And that's when the protesters are struck.
Was that the Lexus?
That's the one with the three people that were struck.
That's Lexus.
Then there's another one where a woman trying to cross the street, I think with a dog. We don't actually capture that whole incident, but, you know, we can see parts of it. So that was a different issue. Just there was a lot of people milling around in the streets, and you know, a car was trying to pull off from the curb.
So this is a lot of new information, because when we were last on the steps of your office with the occupiers who walked over there to protest what they were calling a lack of a thorough investigation into this, their eyewitnesses were saying something completely different, that they were just sitting there and this guy hit them unprovoked, and they also thought that it was the same car. But what you're saying is that it looks to you like these occupiers actually put themselves in front of a moving car.
You know, the witnesses, we took additional witness statements that day. And as always, in every case, no matter what the incident is, when you have multiple witnesses, you get multiple different witnesses always see something slightly different, have slightly different versions. And that's why when you have additional video to back up different witness statements to clarify what exactly happened, that's always helpful. But that takes time. So all of those things will be looked at now. The videos that we have recovered, the statements of the different witnesses. And we don't think witnesses would intentionally give us wrong information, but witnesses see things from different perspectives, so that their versions often are different.
But I just want to be clear, because I know how much you hate to be misquoted after the show. The video that you've seen of the three who were hit, it looks to you like they...
It looks like that the driver was trying to get through a small gap opening, and that the protesters tried to block the gap. And that's when the collision occurred. And so, put it this way, it clearly did not look like he intentionally tried to run them down.
Let me ask you quickly before we go to traffic and weather about, we just saw out in Maryland a big arrest on a guy who had been doing a lot of carjackings. Talk to us about carjackings in the district. Is that also up at this time of year? Are you having a problem in the district with carjackings?
This year, carjackings are down about 34-35%. So we've had a big reduction in carjackings. I think in the last 2 years, I'm pretty sure we had a reduction last year as well. We did have a spike in it a couple of years ago, but we've been doing pretty well with that. The big issue I see around this time of year, and it sometimes is classified as a carjacking and sometimes not, depending on how the crime occurs, is people at gas stations. You know, I can't stress enough, when you go to the gas station to get gas, take your keys out of the ignition while you're pumping the gas, and when you go in to pay, if you can pay at the pump with a credit card, that's the safest way to do it. But what we'll see is this time of year, somebody will leave their keys in their car, they get out, and as they're pumping the gas, somebody will sneak into the other side of the car, and while you're pumping the gas, the car drives away, you know, while you're still standing there holding the pump. So, or people that leave valuables in their car when they run in to make the payment, and somebody snatches stuff out of their car. But that's the risk this time of year.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier taking your calls and emails on Ask the Chief. More after traffic and weather on the 8th.
Ask the Chief continues with our in-studio guest, D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier. We're taking your calls at 877-336-1035, and you can email questions at WTOP.com. Here's Mark Seagraves.
And let's get back to the phones. We have Al calling from the district on line 3. Al, you are on with the Chief. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, WTOP, and greetings, Madam Chief, and happy holidays. I'm calling about the problem we are having with a liquor store across the street from our home. And the people hang around there on a regular basis, raising hell, drinking in public, and all the cars and vans, everything that goes by, blows horn at them, and they shout. There is no peace. I'm a U.S. citizen, and I don't intend to do anything against the law. I depend on the police to take care of this problem. But unfortunately, the police come around, all they do, go in the store, liquor store, and the other stores, and just walk by as though nothing is happening.
Where is the liquor store at, Al?
It's located at 1st and Q Street, Southwest, Madam Chief.
Okay, I'll take care of that, Al.
I appreciate it, Madam.
Let's get another call in here. John is calling from Bowie. John, you're on with the Chief.
Hi.
Go ahead, John. You there?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Chief, I was calling concerning remarks that were made yesterday by the D.C. Fire Chief, Chief Kenneth Ellerby, concerning a workforce that doesn't live in the district. What is your take on your officers that aren't necessarily district residents?
Just to get everybody up to speed, Kenneth Ellerbe said that about more than 40% of his firefighters live between 30 and 100 miles away from the city. And in fact, some live as far away as New Jersey, Delaware, North and South Carolina. And that's because they work an 8-day shift, 8 days a month, so they don't have these terribly long commutes. He'd like them to work a 22-day shift so that they would be inclined to live closer to the city, because in case of a catastrophe, it would be hard to recall all these first responders. So how you would have to be in the same situation at some point, possibly recalling your first responders. How far away do your rank and file live?
Actually, the issue is a little bit different for us. We have about 20% of our workforce that lives in the district, and we try to have incentives for that. So 4 years ago, I stopped giving take-home cars to people that live outside of the city, and all the take-home cars program were based on people that are in patrol and live in the city. So we significantly increased the take-home car program for people that live in the city, which helps us some. But about 65% of our folks live in Maryland. Now, I don't have the issue that is big an issue with people living so far away. We do have a few.
Do you know the furthest commuter you have?
Not off the top of my head. I know we have some like Frederick, Fredericksburg. There's a couple.
Nobody in the Carolinas.
I am not aware
of anybody
in the Carolinas.
You don't have officers who work just 8 days a month, though.
Right. And so it's a different issue for us. There's a lot less, it's a lot more difficult to have a commute that long when you're working every day and you have the shift issue that we have. But, you know, even though we prefer to try and get as many members as possible living in the city, we can create all kinds of incentives. So for specialized units that are likely to be recalled, I now have a vacancy announcement. When they apply for those jobs, they have to live within the 25 miles because recall time is important. So it's a little bit different issue for us. And I know there is a financial concern for officers and firefighters and living in the city, especially if they, you know, are raising children and they can, you know, live cheaper cost of living somewhere else and still commute in at a reasonable time. So.
Chief, let me go back to the violent crime. I'm getting some emails from the union. We'll have a virtual debate here between you and the union.
No, but we're not going to have a virtual debate between me and the union.
But they,
you may have a debate with the union, but
well,
I'm not.
They're sending me the crime stats that are on your website right now that show violent crime, and these are year-to-date, up 10% over the same period last year, and total crime is up 7%. Is that not, is your website incorrect?
I'm not looking at the website, Mark, and I'm not going to get into debate with the union. Anybody listening to this show can go to my website and look at the crime stats. Right now, we have a 2% overall increase in robberies compared to last year at this time. We have a 20% reduction in homicides. We have a 19% reduction in armed offenses and almost a 20% reduction in shootings. Those are the stats I know off the top of my head. I don't know what website they're looking at, where on the website they're looking at. If somebody wants to look at that, they can. I'm not going to debate with the union. I mean, the sky's always falling, as I said.
Let me ask you another question about a topic that's been in the news a lot lately, and that is the technology of license plate readers. And the Washington Post did a very comprehensive report on this and showed that throughout the region, D.C.'s not alone, but in this area and in D.C. particularly, there are more of these license plate readers than anywhere else in the country. Mm-hmm. And these are technology and I guess some are fixed to cars, some are, I guess you're not going to tell us where they all are, but it's technology that allows them to capture a license plate, and it records the date, the time, and the location of where that license plate was spotted, mm-hmm. and then you save that data for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you say there's an upside to this, but there are privacy concerns as well. So talk a little bit about the plans to expand this program. We just saw a federal grant of more than $1 million to the region to expand this program. And then the pros and cons of you know, people who are worried about, you know, if I'm not doing anything wrong and you don't have a warrant, why should you be able to track my comings and goings?
Well, it's the same thing that law enforcement did with pen and paper for years. I mean, there's no restriction on my jotting down a tag number in the area of a crime scene to try and determine if witnesses and associates of a crime. So it's the same principle. It's just, it's automated now. And the system, we don't go searching through the system for general purposes. We need a criminal predicate to use to research things in the system. And if you look at just the sheer volume of data that's in there, it would be impossible to think that we would have the time or, you know, desire to do that. You know, these license plate readers are not only used by MPD and not only used by the police, but we use those. I mean, I think the DPW trucks have license plate readers on them. So they can identify, you know, vehicles that have outstanding, you know, parking issues or whatever. They've helped us significantly to reduce the auto theft problem. We've made about 54 arrests so far this year. People occupying stolen cars. It helps us recover people's cars quicker. When your car gets stolen, if you've ever had that horrible experience, we recover the cars a lot faster because the license plate readers pick them up. So it really is an automated way of doing what law enforcement has always done, just not with pencil and paper anymore.
We'll follow up on this right after another look at traffic and weather on the 8s.
We continue with Ask the Chief. D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier, our guest this hour. We're taking calls at 877-336-1035 and email questions. Go to WTOP.com. Here's Mark Seagraves.
Chief, here's one of our email questions that comes in from Ray. He drives through the district each day, and he noticed that D.C. police regularly conduct traffic stops in the lanes of traffic stopping. Then this causes a backup, particularly during rush hour, if you pull someone over in the right-hand lane, and then you lose that curb lane. And he also says that when there are small fender benders, that those aren't quickly enough moved out of the way and they impede the flow of traffic. I know you've heard this before on this show, but what do you tell your officers? Is there a protocol to be mindful of the fact that, hey, you're making a traffic stop, but there are thousands of people behind you coming down Connecticut, Wisconsin, whatever, they're trying to get home or trying to get to work?
Yeah. Well, two issues. One is on the traffic stops. You know, we're kind of darned if we do and darned if we don't. I mean, if there's somebody who's operating a vehicle that's putting people in jeopardy, whether it's rush hour or not, we really need to pull them over to address that. So, you know, I apologetic for the backups in traffic, but I think that's an important thing that we should be doing if there's a need to pull somebody over because of safety issue. The other issue about, you know, the sense of urgency to get cars out of the road and to clear traffic. You know, I've put a lot of focus in over the past couple of months, and will for the remainder of this year. Our focus is going to be to try and we've issued a couple of teletypes out to the troops to have a little bit more of a focus on traffic management around the city, because, you know, for so many years, we were so focused on fighting the violent crime that we didn't do a really good job on traffic management and quickly clearing roadways and making sure that we don't have traffic backups. So we're putting a lot of emphasis on that. And your folks here, Bob Marburg, is working with us on creating this traffic desk. But yeah, we're sending out reminders that, you know, immediately when you get on the scene, as quickly as possible, get that roadway cleared, get the vehicles out of the way, and, you know, help facilitate traffic flow.
Chief, I believe it was last June, your officers had an incident with a man who was barricaded. The officers shot and killed him in the course of that barricade incident. His family is now represented by a local attorney many people know, A. Scott Bolden, who has sent you a letter that he has sent to me and shared with other reporters, asking, one, for a meeting with you and the family to try to come to grips with some resolution here as to what happened on that day, and did it really need to end so tragically? And two, he asks in this letter if you've done your own internal investigation and what the results are of that. He says he's gotten no response from the department from his letter. What do you say?
I saw the letter yesterday. I don't know how long ago you got it.
It's dated November. It's dated Thanksgiving, November 23rd.
Yeah, well, it came across my desk yesterday, so I don't know.
Will you meet with the family?
Well, I have the general counsel who's going to handle all that from this point. So I'm sure there'll be some discussions with the attorneys. But let me get back to your first question, and what's the status of the investigation? You know, any use of force, lethal use of force by the police department, the process is very clear. We do our own internal review, but we also send it over to the U.S. Attorney's Office for review. And that particular case right now is at the U.S. Attorney's Office for review. When that review is complete, then we will do our internal investigation. So that's not done yet, and probably will be some time before that's done. But I'm sure that with the family having representation, a general counsel, an OAG, we'll meet with the representatives and we'll work with them where we can.
Let me ask you, this holiday season, I know a lot of people are going to be going out to holiday parties, and this is traditionally the time of year we see a lot of DUI checkpoints and whatnot. The district has been unable to conduct breathalyzer tests in the field for, I can't recall, it's been quite a while now. Will you have them? Can you update us on that? Will you have them in time for holiday DUIs before Christmas and New Year's?
You know, we're still running a very, very strong alcohol enforcement program, and our arrests are pretty consistent with what they've been in previous years. It's just simply a different means of testing. And I'll remind people that, you know, By the time we take you to a breathalyzer, you're already under arrest. And 99% of the time, it's for a variety of obvious alcohol-related issues. So the breathalyzer is something that's done after the fact. So it doesn't impact our ability to go out there and do alcohol enforcement. And you will see a lot of alcohol enforcement. I just signed off yesterday on the plan for deployment through the holidays. So I just would just remind people that we have a very strong alcohol program in the district with or without the breathalyzers. We were recognized last year by the National Highway Transportation Safety folks for having the largest, second largest reduction in alcohol-related fatalities in the nation. So don't take a chance driving, drinking and driving here.
How many checkpoints can we expect to see? I mean, you just signed off. What can you tell us about that?
It's over the course of several weeks. They'll be set up in a variety of different locations at different times. So, I mean, off the top of my head, you're probably going to see them 15, 20 times between now and the end of the year.
Let's get to a quick phone call. We have Michael calling in from the district. Go ahead, Michael.
Yes, yes, ma'am, Chief. I want to know the policy regarding the stop and frisk. I worked shift work in a computer-related company, and I was in near Thomas Circle back in May by one of the unmarked white vehicles, cars, and they got out, and they had their guns drawn, lights flashed, and said there had been a fight up the street or something, and they asked, could they search me? Now, that didn't necessarily bother me, but it was the collection of my information. What happens to that information? And I'm also feel like I'm being made a statistic. I'm a law-abiding citizen, and I walk a lot. I walk all over the city, Wisconsin Avenue, Georgetown, and I just want to know what can I do to avoid such situations happening in the future.
Well, I obviously, since I don't know all the details of your stop, and in fact, I'm not even sure if it was our officers. You have to remember there's a lot of different law enforcement agencies operating here in the city, and I'd be happy to follow up with you one-on-one afterwards. But I would say, in general, typically if there's a call for service or a fight, like you said, in an area, and you are stopped by an officer, and they get your information and run it through dispatch, that information is not stored. Most often, you'll see an officer who will just go over the radio and say from your driver's license and ask the dispatcher to check for warrants or things like that. It's not retained by us anywhere. But it depends on the circumstances, is all I can say. If you were in an area where they were investigating a crime, it is lawful for them to do a contact and a stop. Now, if they were rude or unprofessional, that's a different issue that I'd address with you. But sounds like to me they were investigating a crime at the time they made the stop.
More of your questions for the chief after traffic and weather on the 8th.
This is our final segment of Ask the Chief with our guest, D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier and WTOP's Mark C. Graves.
Chief, let's talk about cab drivers and not fare increases, which has been in the news. But cab drivers are often victims of crime, just like everybody else, and they're and sometimes, sadly, easy targets.
Yeah, we had put some information out. We'd met with the cabbies and shared some information with them. We had a spree of cab driver robberies. It was about 11 cab driver robberies or carjackings that occurred over a pretty short period of time. So in trying to increase their safety until we caught the folks, you know, we were trying to get information out. But I just wanted to update. We have made some arrests in those cases now. We do think that there was more than just one group that were involved in it, but we did make an arrest last week. We arrested a 25-year-old man and a 15-year-old who were working together and robbing these cab drivers. So, you know, our cab drivers have a tough job, and we want to make sure that they're safe. But, you know, one of the things that we see this time of year, and the other thing we just put out, and I want to emphasize, we have some YouTube videos out that we put out to try and identify some of these robbery problems we're having right now, commercial robberies. This time of year, we always remind people to be aware of your surroundings when you go into a store, whether it be a 7-Eleven or a convenience store or a shopping center. Just be aware of your surroundings when you go in, because we've had in the past 4 days, we've had a spike in robberies of establishments. So we've had 7-Elevens hit two or three times. We've put some video out to ask for the public's help on YouTube to help us identify the people involved in that. But a group of three or four gentlemen running around the city that are hitting these commercial establishments armed with guns. So any help we can get from the public on that, we really appreciate it.
Chief, let me ask you. Prince George's County recently had a press conference. They had a huge backlog of felony warrants in the county, tens of thousands, in fact, and they put a real hard effort on trying to reduce those. And I know that you didn't have near the backlog, but you had some a backlog of felony warrants. What can you tell us about how many outstanding felony warrants you have in the district and what's being done to reduce that number?
I know we've reduced it 53% since last year. We're down somewhere in the neighborhood of 400, about 400 that are still open. We started at the beginning last year with like 900. So we've had about a 53% reduction over the years. But we got a whole task force that's working on that together to try and get those felony warrants down.
And are they violent offenders? Do you prioritize them that way?
We do prioritize the teams that are going out to try and pick up the folks on the warrants. We do prioritize the violent crimes. But the number that I gave you, 400 and some, total felony warrants is all felony warrants. It's not just violent crime.
I was eavesdropping on a conversation you had the other morning at the Mayor's Council Breakfast, and you were saying that you're taking a trip, a business trip, next month to Dubai. What can you tell us about
that? You weren't eavesdropping. As soon as I walked in the door, you said, what are you, going out of town, Chief?
tell us about
who's
this.
Who's paying for it? Where are you going?
Well, you, there are my questions. What can you tell us?
You've been stalking me, Mark. yes.
I stalk a lot of
public
figures.
I was one of four representatives. We'll be one of four representatives from the United States that was invited to go to a global symposium on law enforcement. It's a very impressive group of people that will be there. There is representatives from all over the world, law enforcement representatives from all over the world to attend this symposium. So it's only 3 days. I typically have not traveled at all since I've been the chief. I'm not big on travel, and I don't particularly like being out of the city where I can't get back here quickly. But this is a very important symposium, and I think we can learn a lot from it. And I've been asked to present when I'm there as well, so I'm looking forward to it.
Who's paying, and how does that work?
No cost to the city. It's all being provided by the organizers of the conference. They're paying for everything.
Is that the Dubai government, or is that a separate organization?
I don't know. I believe it's coming from the organizers.
Who went to Dubai on the government's dime.
I believe it's being organized. I mean, I gave you all the contact information, so you can talk to the organizers.
And are you being paid? Are you being compensated for going?
No, they asked me to come and present on issues from Washington, D.C., and I'm doing that, to be part of this conference.
Let's get another call in here. Keith is calling from D.C. Keith, you're on with the chief.
Good morning, Chief. Keith in Ward 4.
Is this Keith Jarrell? Do I recognize the voice?
You do.
All right. Thank you, Keith.
I'd like to know, Chief, when we can expect to have some new officials in Ward in the 4th District. As you know, we've gone from four captains to two and from about seven lieutenants down to, I think, five now. We're just short-staffed when it comes to command staff. And when can we expect to see some additions to our command staff?
I know, Commander, you have a good relationship with the commander up there, and she tries to keep you filled in on personnel and staffing. We're in the final stages now of doing the redistricting and implementing that in January. And as a part of that, we're going to look at the alignment of all of the officials to make sure all of the PSAs have lieutenants and that we have the captains distributed equally across the district. So I'd say the first week of January, Keith, is when we're going to do that alignment of personnel. So you'll see some shifts with that realignment.
Chief, in the last few seconds, there have been a couple incidents over the past year of either the public or reporters trying to videotape or photograph officers in public who have been stopped. The law is that the public are allowed to videotape, and what are you telling your officers?
I know what the biggest issue is. I've seen it in my career over the past 20 years is, officers are always so focused on protecting the identity of victims, witnesses, and children that sometimes because that's what we do all day long. That's one of our primary things. And sometimes on an incident like the incident that happened last week, officers forget that, as long as the area is open to the public, it's not impeding our crime scene, that the video, the reporters can, cameramen can video. And I think in that case, what happened was the officers, trying to protect the identity of the child. And most reporters will not show.
This was the infant that was in the carjacking.
Yeah. I mean, so the officers were trying to protect the cameras from getting a video of this little child in the car, and they can't do that. So we have to constantly reinforce what our policy is. But I do understand that, sometimes how this confuses the officers and why they do what they do. But we're working on it.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier, we appreciate it every month when you come in.